And good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting from the front lines in the battle for freedom and liberty, Olympia, Washington, Isengard on the sound, as it were. Brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about not putting our hope in man, but putting our hope in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action, and understanding that there is a difference between the gospel of salvation and the gospel of the kingdom, and the idea that we need to get out beyond the four walls of the church and expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ. As Jeremiah 17:7 through 8 says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord. For he will be like a tree planted by the water that extends its roots by a stream and will not fear when the heat comes, but its leaves will grow green and it will not be anxious in a year of drought nor cease to yield fruit." This year is like any other year in many ways, and it is completely different than any other year in many ways as well. And I want to focus on the differences right now. We have an opportunity this year to show what all the Marxists and the socialists actually think about us. I mean, they literally think that all of us are haters and that our opinions don't matter and they just want to push their agenda forward. And it is an agenda that is really the beginnings of totalitarianism in Washington State and America. It is an agenda that would seek to take away your right to bear arms, would take away your property rights, would tax you into oblivion. And so I want to talk a little bit about that today and what is actually happening in Olympia, especially after the cheap shot that was sent my way yesterday at the end of the first day of the legislative session. There are no rules for these guys, and we need to understand that. We fight honorably, but there are no rules for these guys, and we shouldn't be surprised when they do things that, you know, might be shocking to our conscience, because they really aren't shocked. They don't really care. And yesterday, I was so encouraged because I had a whole bunch of supporters sitting quite literally in my office when I showed up in Olympia, and I had just signs and well wishes and all those kind of things. Compared that to the flood of cameras when I walked onto the floor of the House of Representatives, and you can kind of see this stark contrast between those who love liberty, those who believe the Constitution means what it says, those who believe the Bible means what it says, and those who don't. And you know what? That's okay. They can have that. But this idea of the state of king, I think, is getting more merit. Now, that came from the Seattle Times. That didn't come from Eastern Washington. This idea that they want to break away and have their own downtown Seattle core. We're going to talk a little bit about that, too, because I think they're finally understanding that they believe that we are getting in the way of their agenda. Well, my guest today knows all about this. He's actually been writing about it for quite a long time on We the Governed, my good friend Glenn Morgan, who just brings an insight that few have about what's happening in Olympia and also what's happening in Washington, D.C. Glenn, thanks for joining me once again on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing?
Well, Matt, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and thanks for having me on the air.
So, you know, we have this, you know, the Speaker of the House makes a big deal about everything yesterday. You know, she is the first woman elected, and that's a good thing. But she then goes on to say, it is an absolute catastrophe, a disaster, that I-976 was passed. It's going to devastate transportation in Washington State. What is your comment on that? And this whole push for tax increases when we have record budgets and budget surpluses, you know, going back not just a couple years, but going back quite a while.
Well, you know, I mean, this is always the situation that we find. And this, you know, for people that haven't seen this before, they have to remember that knowing your history is a pretty important part of understanding what happens in Olympia. But, Number one, they'll never accept higher, you know, taxes have to be higher no matter what. So even if they get a record volume of taxes coming in, you know, there just isn't enough money in the world for them to be satisfied with it. And inevitably, and they, the minute you even attempt to question or challenge it, you know, just even just shaving off a very as small a percentage of the overall transportation budget as 976 might take, they want to make it seem like it's the end of the world. And it really isn't about the money. It's about the fact that they don't want the citizens of Washington to even have the recourse to ever reduce any of the tax money that's coming to them. Once they get their stream of taxes, your money, my money, once they get that coming in, they want to try to, in any and every way possible, cut off any way that we might have to reduce that flow of taxes. Because, you know, it's largely about power, money, and control. And, you know, our taxes are really what's funding their power, the way they see it. And so for them, you know, they don't care about being incompetent with their money or squandering it or wasting it on useless projects, particularly Sound Transit and light rail boondoggles. That's okay. They don't care about that. They just want to keep getting as much of our money as they possibly can. And, you know, 976, the vote, that was I think that actually kind of shocked a lot of them. Just to see, you know, and it's not just the Democrats in charge, but just to see the shock at the bureaucracy, because here they got all these big corporations to fund, you know, multi-million-dollar campaign, $5 million campaign attacking Tim Iman for daring to put that on the ballot, and still it prevailed. And, you know, I think that it's been frustrating for them to see that. And of course, they're going to try to do anything they can to, you know, keep as much of that money as they possibly can.
Well, I think that there was a very intellectually awkward moment yesterday when the Speaker of the House tried to say, you know, the I-976 is going to, you know, devastate transportation for the low income and in the middle income families in Washington State. And the problem with that statement is that I-976 was passed bipartisan, and it was overwhelmingly passed by bipartisan, but also people were suffering from these massive car tabs that were quite literally pricing them out of the ability to drive, and right. She didn't seem to recognize that.
Well, and I thought it was so funny because you oftentimes hear Democrats, and this is kind of inside the weed, you know, down the weeds a little bit. Well, they'll argue about, you know, we have such a regressive tax system because it affects the lower income people. And then at the same time, they will move heaven and earth to impose that exact type of tax on the very people that they claim they want to help. And then when those same people push back and say, we don't want it, you know, they suddenly, I mean, they can't square that circle, but they sure try. And of course, they're fortunate that most of the mainstream media will give them cover for that.
Well, Glenn, we get this pushback and this idea that if we cut taxes or we keep taxes low, that we just aren't going to have enough money to run the state. I know you've written a little bit about this. There's quite a bit of waste, fraud, and abuse in the system, not just at the state level, but also the local level. Is it really true that if taxes are low, we would just not be able to survive as the state of Washington?
Yeah, no, and that, we know that's not true. And the question always comes down to, how much and in what way can you reduce taxes and make sure that we keep our money? Because the implied idea there is that government somehow can spend our money better than we can. And people might, you know, there's an instinctive idea that you point to somebody else, your neighbor, and say, well, they're not spending the money as well as I can spend it for them, right? That's the idea. But yet when somebody points at you and says, I bet I can spend your money better than you, very few people actually believe that about themselves. And so they're taking kind of that natural human tendency, that envy, or that belief that you can do something better than somebody else can, because you aren't in their shoes, you don't know the decisions they're making. And they just implement that government, you know, statewide, and from a government's perspective, that nanny state idea that they can do it better than we can. And that attitude is something that I think we always have to push back, because that's ultimately what it is that decision that somehow this unelected group of bureaucrats, who, by the way, have self-serving interests, they want your money because that's how they make their money. That's how they have their power. That's how they reward their friends. And the massive increase in budget in Washington State over the last 10 years, you've seen in Olympia, does anybody actually believe we're getting a proportionate value return in the quality of government or so-called services that we might get from them. And the reality is, I don't think that most people would really feel that objectively when you look at it. Now, the bureaucrats or the special interests who profit from it would, but the rest of us who are having to foot those bills, we don't see that proportionate improvement in education or in transportation or in public safety or in anything that government does. It's very difficult for government to do anything well, and it's more typical that they just get more incompetent and wasteful with the more money that we give them. And, now the thing that they'll oftentimes do, they don't do this to me anymore, but I remember when I've opposed tax increases or run campaigns to stop tax increases before at a local level, they used to always say, well, then you tell us, what your alternative is. Where would you cut the budget? And I'm always happy to come back and tell them where to cut the budget. And so that's why they don't bring that up anymore. But that used to be one of their arguments. And I always encourage people, if you do get involved in opposing some of these tax increases at a local or state level, try to come in with some good examples that you might want to use about where budgets could be cut or how you might approach cutting budgets, because there are lots of opportunities to cut budgets at a local as well as at the state level. And once you start pointing those out to them, it's funny how oftentimes they don't want to talk about it anymore.
It really is funny. And I'm, I have offered opportunities to cut the budgets several times via amendment. And, it's interesting that it didn't even want to be brought up for discussion. They didn't, the leadership. And it was also interesting, too. They didn't deny that what I was saying was correct. What they tried to do is say, well, we have other priorities, right? Well, really, what are these other priorities? Well, we heard a little bit about them yesterday. And I was actually shocked that one didn't get brought up, but it really, I believe, is the main priority for the Democrats this session and for the socialists this session, and that's gun control. But before we get to that, I want to kind of back up. They said that one of their main priorities is solving this housing crisis. Really, in a great respect, this is a created crisis because we have made it so hard to build single-family homes that now there is a shortage. So therefore, we have to build a bunch of these apartments or maybe apartments, these 200 square feet dorm rooms, right? Essentially. Talk a little bit about that and this kind of attack on property rights that's now resulted in this housing crisis.
Well, this is something I think it's important, especially when we talk about housing. But housing's not alone. Public safety, there's all kinds of different areas where we see that, and this goes back a number of years because these things take a while to build up. But if you decide, okay, we don't like urban sprawl, remember this is an environmental movement back in the 80s and early 90s, so we passed the Growth Management Act, the absolute solution to all of our problems in this state. And so when they pass that, of course, and then they impose increasingly draconian and irrational and illogical and very expensive sort of requirements for home building, not that improves safety or quality of the home, but that actually just simply increases the cost of a home. And I believe that some of the studies have shown that in King County, for example, many of these regulations increase it by $150,000 or $200,000 in some cases, that purely just a waste, $25,000 for the permits before you even break ground. All that's doing is feeding the bureaucracy. So they create this artificial inflation of the cost of a home. And then is it any surprise that on the margins, people struggle more and more to be able to afford to buy or purchase or build a home? They can't remodel it without a $10,000, permitting costs and inspections and all that. And then what? But mystery of all mysteries, 20 years down the road, it suddenly dawns on them that there's that we can't afford homes anymore. And so now, of course, they want to build the most expensive housing you can possibly make, which is subsidized housing. They want to call it affordable housing, but that's code if you're a leftist or a central planner or that have that attitude. But that's really just code for subsidized housing. And that is the most expensive housing you can make, which is where government basically steps in and says, okay, we've created this problem. Well, they don't admit that, but they've created a problem and made housing so expensive and so difficult to get for many people that now they're going to use your tax dollars, so therefore increase your cost of living, And now they're going to build these super expensive housing because, and it won't be nice. You know, they have a Camp Quixote in Olympia, which is an early example of this, that they built a number of years ago, where they built 10 by 12 shacks for on donated land, land that was owned by government, given to this so-called nonprofit for free. And then you looked at the total cost after a few years, each of these 10 by 12 shacks had a cost that was higher than what it would cost just to go out and build a regular single family home in the private sector. And it's ridiculous, but it's because we're creating this homeless industrial complex or this, you know, subsidized housing industry that these people are able to feed on the crisis created, you know, by government and government's regulations in the first place. And of course, the solution is always, if you believe government's the solution, it's just to come up with a whole new program that in effect only makes it worse, but it does distribute a lot more of our money, our tax dollars, to political insiders, to special interests who profit from this. And ultimately, you know, it's self-created problem. If you really wanted more affordable housing, we would get out of the central planning business and allow the private sector, the private market, to be able to determine how to build homes that are quality, that people actually want, and let our communities grow in a natural way so that they could actually provide what people need. It's amazing. People have been able to do that for thousands of years. It's only modern times now. It seems like the government must come in and be the solution. And of course, they just make it worse.
Well, we haven't talked about this on the show for a while, but let's talk about pocket gophers. It's a good reminder of how, you know, kind of random and really not just unproven, but ridiculous regulations stop growth in a massive fashion. Remind the listeners a little bit about pocket gophers.
Sure. And this is a story that comes out of Thurston County, just south of Olympia, where they basically determined that, you know, thousands and thousands of acres in the county were going to suddenly be pocket gopher habitat for an animal that the federal government had actually been explicitly involved in funding poison control efforts going back decades, you know, to the 1950s, and an attempt to eradicate this pest that goes and eats the roots of trees. And it you know, burrows holes in your fields and all that. And so the conclusion of the federal government had been that this is an impossible to eradicate species. It's a pest. It qualifies as a pest. Turn around, and a few years later, they decided, no, now it's not a pest. We're going to call it endangered because there's something unique about the pocket gopher that lives in Thurston County versus any other pocket gopher that exists all over the Western United States. They're all basically the same, but we're going to suddenly pretend that this one's unique and different and listed as a threatened species, and then therefore prevent you from being able to build homes, from being able to put fences up, from being able to let your kids run in the backyard, you know, prevent you from putting a porch on your house. And then once they realized they couldn't totally prevent all that, then their solution was, well, then you need to spend up to $42,000 on a pocket gopher habitat set aside tax, that you would set aside some mitigation of land somewhere for pocket gophers. And in exchange, then once you've spent all that money, we'll let you go build your house. And these costs are absurd. And what they do is they radically increase the cost of housing, make it very difficult to build homes. And even if you already own the home, making it difficult for you to actually even use your property to mow your lawn, to, you know, put in landscaping, to run horses on your back property. And this is it was just a ridiculous case. And it's a nice little example. It's a terrible situation, but a nice example of how one oddball regulation that's totally absurd is used to impact and harm tens of thousands of people and directly affect their ability to live in that community. And if it's the pocket gopher today, it could be the white bluff bladder pod tomorrow, like that down the Tri-Cities. It could be the streakhorn lark, the Gary Oak. It could be the Oregon spotted frog. It doesn't matter. Whatever the excuse of the day is, those things are then used to prevent people from being able to, you know, live a normal life and do normal things. And so the absurdity of some of these excuses, I've almost thought that it's like somebody somewhere is, you know, there's a drinking game and they want to come up with the most ridiculous excuse they can and see if people will buy it. And when government's coming up with these, you know, ideas, they seem to be able to get people to buy into almost anything. Now, you and I and the people who live in these communities aren't happy with that, and we know that they're fraudulent and false. But it requires us to stand up and confront them to start exposing the truth about this stuff and pushing back on it.
You know, I was reminded of a video that came out of South America. The guy originally, I think, was from Venezuela, but he was commenting on the things that were happening in Chile and very clearly said exactly what you just said. He said, these people laugh about this. They try to think up the most ridiculous things and laugh about it and push the boundaries of sanity just to prove that they're in control and to kind of try to lord it over in this kind of backhanded way. People that, you know, don't really realize what's going on. And I think that that's why I want to shift gears a little bit. There is another attempt at controlling people that is out there, and the hearing is going to be coming up on Monday. It's an issue that is near and dear to the hearts of many people in the future Liberty State or the rest of Washington, you know, with the state of King, however you would like to say it. This issue for many people is kind of a line in the sand, you know, and it goes back before the founding of America as a country. Gun control. What is coming up Monday? What can people expect? Where can they go to be involved?
Well, you know, there's going to be hearings in Olympia, and you have to stay on top of where these hearings are going to be and who has them. And that's going to be, you know, I would encourage people to go and email their legislators, tell them that they're in opposition to these gun control issues. And I, you know, this is just an attempt to restrict our ability to defend ourselves. And they'll say, well, what we're trying to do is just ban high capacity magazines today, or we're going to just try to take away semi-automatic rifles so that you can't have that. So, I mean, who really needs that? And, you know, they have these, and we've heard this before. I mean, this goes back to my first days as an activist, you know, as a pro-guns, pro-Second Amendment guy back in the 90s when I was in college. These are the same things over and over again that they've been doing. And they view each of these issues, they pull test them, they decide, okay, well, this is one we can get now. Once we get this one, then we're going to come in, we're going to prevent people from having pistols, or we're going to prevent people from being able to get concealed carry, or we're going to make it harder for you. You know, there's all kinds of different issues here. And this really is, it's more than just a slippery slope. It's the truck out of control with the brakes going down the hill. You really have to stop it from starting and push back on this really aggressively. And I think the main thing to remember is that their greatest fear is our ability to stand up for ourselves, to push back against them, and to hold them accountable, them being the elected officials who do push these ideas. And I think that to some extent, this is a little bit of a desperate move, because I do believe that, in particular, the Democrat majority realizes that they're operating a little bit on borrowed time. People in Eastern Washington may not be as familiar with the fact that the homeless disaster, and it's just a homeless drug addict disaster going on in downtown Seattle and elsewhere, is starting to become so impossible to ignore and so easy to see the causes that these Democrat policies, Democrat-sponsored policies have had, that they know who's doing it, and that these local elected officials and state officials are trying to distract people and point them anywhere else except for the solving these problems, that I think that they realize their political control is weakening, and they're very concerned about losing political control. So distracting people with whatever they can distract them with, whether it's gun control, higher taxes, more regulations, whatever it is, that seems to be one of their priorities right now. And to remember that this, to some extent, is an act of desperation. They want you to be demoralized. They want you to leave. They want you to think it's impossible to make a change. And when you stand up and you push back against them, that is the greatest thing they fear. And that's one thing to remember. We should always be doing what they fear, which is that showing up, pushing back, exposing the truth, and then holding them accountable.
We have, every year a gigantic push for gun control, and it takes many different forms, you know, ammunition, you know, limitations, magazine bans, trying to ban so-called assault weapons, which that doesn't even exist, whatever that is.
Right.
Because there are really good people that say, you know, look, there's just so much gun violence out there and we shouldn't really do this. But on the flip side of it, there's so many stories of a disabled man, for example, having an AR-15, and that was the only thing that really could have fended off the intruders into his home, or the single mom in a high-crime neighborhood that was able to defend herself and her child because she was armed. We have these other stories out there. Those don't seem to count. And you bring up the homeless situation. There also has been a dramatic rise of crime in some of these areas as well. It's a fact, a statistical fact. And there are people that are saying, you know what, I actually want to start becoming trained and armed because I'm really concerned about where this is headed. You know, how do you answer kind of the opposition, you know, and the folks that are pushing gun control and maybe well-meaning citizens that say, you know, there is too much gun violence out there?
Yeah. And so I think the biggest thing I always point out to them is that, you know, people have the right to defend themselves. Or do you believe that? Right. And if they do, so do you believe you have the right to defend yourself? And in which, if you do, how would you do that? Because, you know, we're reducing the amount of, you know, the ability of law enforcement to actually properly defend and protect people. You know, we're doing a lot of things to make it harder. And so recognizing that that's the case, how would you go about doing that? And I think when I've had conversations with people where we really go and dig into it from a policy standpoint, personally, they start to realize that, you know, maybe I do want the ability to defend myself. And, you know, and now the problem is, of course, there's a lot of times an attitude where, well, I'm responsible, but those people can't be, right? And that's oftentimes a much more difficult discussion to have because people oftentimes think, well, the rules don't really apply to me or they apply to me differently. And I think sometimes they say, well, we can trust these people to implement the rules correctly. And I think it's not difficult to point out lots of examples where they don't implement those rules correctly. And in fact, we can't trust them to implement these rules. And we need to allow people the right and ability to defend themselves, because who would really think that a person who's willing to commit violence or, you know, terrible acts, crimes, rape, whatever, who believes that somebody like that would suddenly decide, well, oh, well, they just passed the law, I better not use a firearm myself, even though I'm going to go out and murder somebody or break into their homes. I mean, that's obviously absurd. And even in Seattle, I don't think that people believe that. So it's encouraging people to think a little bit more about what would I do in their position to protect my family or myself. And we really just have to continue to expose people, I think, especially those who don't know better, take them out shooting. You know, if they've never shot a firearm, say, you know, why don't you, well, I'll take you over to the range, or I'll take you out, I'll show you some, what it's like to shoot a firearm and a pistol. So you don't have some sense of, you know, some irrational or illogical or just based on ignorance, you know, experience there. And that, I think that does have an impact in the community. I know I've done that for a lot of people, and Matt, I'm sure you have too over the years. And the more people that you train and teach, the less they have ignorance, and the less ignorant they are about it, and the less it's harder for them then to be fooled by people who make up stories, basically.
Well, you know, lastly, let's talk about, you know, anybody that has a differing opinion today from the socialists and the Marxists gets labeled. And now we have the weaponization of labels that's occurring. We see, you know, what's happening with the president at the national level, but also Congressman Steve King, who conclusively proved that after a meeting at the Mandarin Occidental Hotel in Washington, D.C. in 2016, in November to be specific, that there was a massive rise in the use of the term white nationalism. Saw Candace Owens in her testimony talking about the fact that these terms were specifically white nationalism and domestic terrorism were very little used up until recently. And it seems that there is a weaponization of labels against people that they disagree with, and they're trying to overturn legitimate election results with illegitimate election results. And specifically, we're seeing the way that I'm being treated in the legislature. I'd like you to comment on that weaponization of labels and where you think this is headed, and also what you think people can do to fight back.
It's been going on for a long time. I mean, those might be labels that are currently being used, right? But we've seen this going back quite a ways,
sure,
many, many decades, really. And it's they're just more organized and systematic now with social media and the ability to actually get a bunch of leftists to kind of get on the same page quickly. and then let the media, who basically are mostly leftist or left sympathetic, let them jump on too. And so now it's just, it appears faster now, right? When they label you as an extremist or far right or alt-right or whatever it is they want to make up, whatever that name is, you know, that they want to assign to you. Once they find that doesn't work as well, you know, deplorables, I don't know, whatever they find when the label doesn't work as well as they want it to, you'll see them switch really quickly. And I think that at the same time, you know, labels have been a very common thing going back in politics for, you know, a long time. And so it's important to use labels effectively and accurately as much as possible, push back when they're obviously inaccurate, but also point out how they're being used in a coordinated fashion in order to silence debate and in order to, you know, close that Overton window, you know, reduce the amount of things that you're allowed to speak about in politics, and to intimidate people, because nobody is a white nationalist. So what happens is, you know, you say, well, I'm not that, and you spend all your time defensive. Then what happens is you don't spend any of your time actually being productive and talking about, well, here's the issues that we actually have to address. I mean, it's mainly a way to just throw you off. And so I don't think you have that. You want to really resist that and do a much better job focusing on the issues that you're concerned about and pointing out that those labels are just simply being used as a way to distract people from the real issues that we have to address in this situation.
Yeah, and you're right. You're absolutely right. It has been going on for quite a while, but these labels are kind of the recent iteration. We're starting to see it. So this next year, you're going to see the label, like they labeled the NRA down in San Francisco, a domestic terrorist organization, even though it's one of the most longstanding, well-respected pro-gun organizations in the country, if not in the world, right? So the last thing I want to ask you is about We the Governed. Tell the listeners a little bit about it, where people can go to find out more about you and read about some of the exposés that you've done.
Well, so it's wethegoverned.com, and I've been writing there for a number of years now since I left the Freedom Foundation. And, you know, it's been getting a lot more traction and attention, especially over the last couple of years. I also have a YouTube channel that's affiliated with it, also We the Governed, if you search on YouTube. And you can look at a lot of stories. I just recently came out with a story out of Western Washington University that the local media refused to cover, that was had exposed in an internal audit that they were giving ghost credits and ghost classes to their students in order to commit financial aid fraud. And in fact, the students were sometimes failing the classes, and they'd still give them credits anyway in order to get more federal dollars for their own institution. The interesting thing is that the auditor who helped put together this internal report got terminated and removed. She's the second auditor that's been removed like that. And there's much more coming out on that story. And, you know, when you're starting to combine this with what I've been talking about from Evergreen College, which has turned into a kind of a circus show of chaos, we're really exposing some of the corruption in higher education there. And any wonder that the large percentage of these graduates from a couple of these colleges, the ones who go into our bureaucracy and into the political leadership on the left, it's important to know where they're coming from and what they're being taught in school, if they're being taught anything at all. And why we're having some of the problems that we see as well does start with poor education.
You know, ghost bills and now ghost classes.
And ghost credits. Yeah, you got to like it. You know, we need Ghostbusters out there. So,
right, exactly. So plug the website one more time.
WeTheGoverned.com. You can always go subscribe, sign up, subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. And, you know, always appreciate sharing it with others.
And Glenn, a final message to the millennial generation.
I think it's important to engage and involve. You can't separate yourself from what's happening in politics. What's being done now is going to be quite impactful in your life. If you're that age and you're starting to think about what you're going to do with your life, you cannot separate yourself from the political process. What happens there is going to impact you in your life. And you've got to realize that engaging and being educated about what's happening and not accepting whatever's shoveled to you, but doing your own homework and also knowing that you can make a big impact, you can make a difference. Get engaged, get involved, and don't go away thinking that there's no hope or that you can't make a difference. You can, because the future does belong to those who show up.
Amen. Glenn Morgan, We the Governed, thanks very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Really appreciate all your work. Keep up the fight.
All right. Thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to shift now to your daily intelligence briefing. And I'm going to go through some of the national and international issues that are out there right now. And, but I also want to focus on Olympia, and particularly the hearing coming up on gun control. We have several other hearings that are coming up that are pretty important, but I want to focus on this one because this is their secret focus. And I didn't bring it up yesterday when the Speaker of the House gave her speech. They didn't really bring this up as a priority, which I think is a misdirection. I think this is their priority. I think taxes are their priority. And I think that we have to be careful that all the bills that they're putting forward with anti-Christian components is a priority for them as well. This is the most anti-Christian, and I'm talking comments, sentiments, looks, the whole package that I have ever seen in the legislature this year. We've seen this. It's disturbing, and we have to keep focused on it. So I'm going to go back to Senate Bill 6077, and I will finish the brief with this as well. Senate Bill 6077, which seeks to ban the manufacture, possession, sale, transfer of standard capacity magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. And yeah. Okay, and the governor probably is going to bring this up today in his State of the State address. Now, I'm recording this in the morning, so this is going to be after. So stay tuned also, because I am doing daily a Facebook video, live video, about what's actually happening in America, in Washington State, and how you can be involved. And again, this weaponization of labels is critical, because if you disagree, you show up to this hearing, you got to know that they're going to try to label you a hater, label you pro-violence, you know, pro-armed conflict. Just because you want to be armed, they try to presume that you want to promote armed conflict. It's a complete absurd statement, but they know it's absurd. They're just trying to play on emotions to try to get people fooled so that this stuff passes, and then they can use Washington as an example to pass it in other parts of the country. All right, so Senate Bill 6077, it's in regards to limiting or banning the manufacture, possession, sale, or transfer of high capacity or standard capacity magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition. So they even recognize, apparently, it's standard capacity magazines. Anyway. All right, that hearing, so get out your pen and paper, is going to be here in Olympia, Monday, January 20th at 10 a.m. Monday, January 20th at 10 a.m. It's tentatively scheduled to be in the Senate Law and Justice Committee. Monday, January 20th, 10 a.m. here in Olympia, Senate Law and Justice Committee. Show up, get involved. Don't let these guys try to just take our rights just because we didn't show up. You know, and listen, the only way that unalienable rights or rights given by God can be taken away is if there is death. In other words, somebody dies, they don't have rights anymore, or there is acquiescence. In other words, we just let them do it. We're not going to let them do it. We're not going to let them trample on those rights. All right. On the international front, and this coming to us from Israel. In Debka file, Iran, Hezbollah geared up for a guerrilla warfare campaign and rocket attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and also against Israel. And speaking at a closed session of parliament, an Iranian general said, "Our operations against the United States are not over," quote, unquote. Then Nasrallah, who is a leader, Hassan Nasrallah is a leader in Beirut, Lebanon, said, quote, "The response to Soleimani's killing is not a single operation, the missile attack on two U.S. bases in Iraq, but rather a long course that leads to the ouster of American forces from the region," end quote. Now, these statements are consistent with the following of Sharia law. That's what these guys are doing. They are trying to implement and follow Sharia law. And part of this strategy that they have is when they are overwhelmed or they don't have dispositive or overwhelming power to win a battle, what they will do is say, okay, listen, we're going to get a truce. And then they have a truce until they build up enough strength to then go back on the attack. Now, it's very clear in the history that Muhammad did this, and you can read about this in his authoritative biography. This is a tactic. It's a strategy that is used. So this idea that all of a sudden, no, nothing's going to be happening in the Middle East just isn't true, and Debkafile is bearing that out. You also have an interesting situation, too, with the Israeli election, that the New Right Party and also the National Union Party are teaming up to run together in the March 2nd election in Israel. Now, this is very important because this election is really going to determine the future of the Middle East near-term and long-term, but also it will determine some issues surrounding Christianity. And we need to be paying attention to this, that if Netanyahu wins, there will be some things that are very positive, I believe, for Christianity that will be implemented in Israel. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go to the Copper Scroll Project and find out for yourselves. All right. The Secretary of State came out and also said, according to Debkafile, that the U.S. will work with Iraq to reduce, maybe, the U.S. military footprint in the region. In addition to that, and this is fascinating to me, they finally admit that this attack at the Pensacola U.S. Naval Air Station was an act of terrorism. Attorney General William Barr said, Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani, a member of the Royal Saudi Air Force, was motivated by jihadist ideology. Folks, this is a huge turning point. Now recognizing that there isn't so-called lone wolves, that some of them are motivated by jihadist ideology. And unfortunately, three U.S. sailors were killed, and eight more were severely wounded. But it is a step forward in recognizing what the threat is and what is actually happening, not just in the United States, but around the world, that there are that some of these folks are following a jihadist ideology, and they believe what it says, and they're just doing it. And that this idea that you know, people that are trying to be Sharia compliant just are safe and it's not a problem, just isn't true, and it's not borne out by history, at least 1,400 years of history. And it's not borne out by the facts. It's just not. All right. On the international front as well, and I want to make sure that we touch on this, Hong Kong. Those folks are still fighting for freedom and liberty over there. The Chinese are making overtures that they may do something. And indeed, they may be forced to do something because of the elections in Taiwan, which elected a pro-freedom leader. So you're seeing a breakout of freedom against China happening in that area of the world. The Chinese are not going to let that sit. And very likely they're going to do something as the protests continue to intensify, and the Chinese government really is having egg on its face. Also on the international front, I'm going to keep reminding about this article that was in the Financial Times advocating for international, aka UN intervention in the United States of America in the elections this year in 2020 in order to prevent civil war. But then it goes further. It also advocates, if that's not bad enough, it also advocates this article, the complete rewriting of the Constitution by a loya yurga, in other words, a tribal council akin to what is in Afghanistan. So in other words, not elected representatives of the people, to rewrite the Constitution of the United States of America. I mean, writing that is advocating something that the founding fathers would have believed would undermine the republic. In other words, it is seditious to try to say you're going to overthrow the Constitution of the United States of America. And they published this in the Financial Times. 10 years ago, people would have said this just never would happen. Never would happen. It's not true. But here it is, black and white. Nobody can refute it. The question now is, why? Why? All right, moving on to the national front. Let's talk about Big Brother quickly. There is a continued push. DHS, Department of Homeland Security, saying that, you know, they may have 229 million people in a biometric database. Democrats and their campaign strategists saying that they're using fake news sites. They're actually creating fake news sites to mislead people during the elections. Interesting. But here's the more important thing. I've advocated for years the use of encryption in text messages, emails, and also phone calls. Yesterday, a reporter for NPR tried to make it sound nefarious. And I asked him this question. I said, that's not the question. The question is, why is the United States government continuing to surveil millions of Americans who are innocent of any crime? That's the question. That was the question that Bill Binney, who created a large part of the network that's being used to do this, is also asking and blowing the whistle on. Why is this use of what the founding fathers would call general warrants, or in other words, the idea that any place could be searched at any time for any reason by the king or his officers, and that created the Fourth Amendment that said, no, you actually have to have a warrant. There needs to be a particular reason that you're searching. Your electronic file cabinet is just like your physical file cabinet and should be treated the same way. You couldn't have people barge into your house and raid your normal file cabinet without a warrant. So how can they do that with surveillance? And so encryption technology is pushing back on that. Ah, Matt, but I don't have anything to hide. And I hear that. Nothing to hide. What do you have to hide? You must have something to hide. If you say that, you're missing the point completely. You're missing the point completely. It is the duty of every American to defend liberty on an individual basis. And what you are essentially saying is that you are shirking your duty to defend liberty. You are saying that you are refusing to defend liberty. You are saying that, you know, it's okay. I'm going to acquiesce to that violation of my right to liberty. Where does that stop? I'll tell you where it stops. It stops with Venezuela. It stops with Chile. It stops with the former Soviet Union. It stops with the current red communists in China. It stops with Cambodia. That's where it ends. It ends in a totalitarian state. And if you don't understand that, then take a deep breath, stop, and go back and read some history, pray about this, because what you are doing is becoming part of the problem. You are becoming part of the precursor to a totalitarian state by acquiescing. So don't acquiesce. And that's the real question that we're talking about when we talk about encryption. Ah, but what about these jihadis you were just talking about, man? What about them? Our intelligence apparatus and our law enforcement apparatus here in the United States of America already has many of these people identified. And if they can, with specificity, lay out the case that that person is associated with, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood or an unindicted co-conspirator In the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terror financing trial ever successfully prosecuted in U.S. history, and those unindicted co-conspirators, that list was upheld on appeal. They can show that. They can get a warrant. Piece of cake. So the two are not mutually exclusive. And I want to bring up next on the national front this idea of a social credit system. The Center for Security Policy had a great article on this. Here and in China is the name of the article. The social credit system here and in China, Center for Security Policy, talking about how the Chinese Communist Party is continuing to combine several hundred million surveillance cameras, facial voice and walk recognition software, quantum computing and artificial intelligence to spy on transactions, communications, and other behavior. In other words, relationships, who you talk to as well, and monitor practically everything about people in real time. The Washington Post is reporting that hundreds of thousands of American college students are being monitored by their schools with a view to affecting behavior modification. I want to say that again. The Washington Post reported that hundreds of thousands of American college students are being monitored by their schools with a view to affecting behavior modification. You want to know why things are happening and people are upset at the millennial generation? Well, you just found out a little bit of the reason why. This social credit score system is already here in America. And again, do we want to have liberty? And is it our duty to defend it? I think the answer to that question is absolutely it is. All right, also on the national front, a Democrat presidential campaign worker said the following, according to James O'Keefe. If Trump wins, cities, and there's an expletive in there I'm not going to say. If Trump wins, cities burn. Wow. And apparently O'Keefe has a number of videos coming up as part of an investigative series exposing presidential candidates on the Democrat side. Now, I want to say something. If a Democrat campaign worker says cities will burn if Trump wins, that's pretty violent, isn't it? And does this person know of a plan to do that? Are they planning for cities to burn if President Trump wins re-election? And then my follow-on question is, why isn't somebody investigating that? Or maybe they are, besides James O'Keefe. Huh. Well, that's interesting. And it raises a question. If the Democrats are doing that when they think nobody is watching anyway, are they projecting onto us conservatives and Christians how they really are themselves? I think it's a fair question. Also on the national front, and this going back to government surveillance, an ex-FBI employee got a slap on the wrist for illegally spying on an anti-Mueller activist. In other words, a pro-Trump activist was spied on. They used government resources to spy on this person and got a slap on the wrist for it. In this coming to us from the Western Center for Media Journalism, in one shocking case, a former FBI analyst was busted for illegally accessing a neighbor's computer over activism against then-Special Counsel Robert Mueller. That FBI agent, now by the way, depending on the database or the tools that a person in government uses, if they're using law enforcement resources for political purposes, it can either be a misdemeanor or a felony depending on what they were using. But this particular person only got a week in jail and a $500 fine. I want you to think about that. And then when somebody tries to tell you that they don't have anything to hide, why are you worried about it? that this stuff is happening on a regular basis. A regular basis. It's quite unbelievable, actually, if you really think about it. All right. Again, I'm going to wrap up here with a couple of things. Readout News talks about hate speech and the weaponization of language. Social justice warriors using hate speech, not just for the president, but also for Congressman Steve King and also for yours truly. Now, take a look at the video that they have posted by Congressman Steve King on the one-year anniversary of the New York Times misquoting him, and apparently it appears to be intentional, the misquote, as Congressman King proves that going forward, that there was a huge spike in language after a meeting at the Mandarin Occidental Hotel in Washington, D.C. Check it out for yourself. I think he proves it. Also, Monday, January 20th, 10 a.m., Senate Law and Justice Committee. Monday, January 20th, 10 a.m., Senate Law and Justice Committee. It's the hearing on the magazine ban. Monday, January 20th, 10 a.m., Senate Law and Justice Committee. As many folks that can be there, be there. Now, we have a pro-gun rally this Friday. We've got another rally for vaccine freedom today. And then also some other things happening this week and next week as well. You also have the March for Life coming up too. If you have the opportunity to go to one of these events, show up in Olympia, make your voice heard, make your voice known. It's so important. It's going to take all of us. It's not going to just be Donald, just Donald Trump or me or Congressman Steve King. It's about all of us. They literally want to label all of us. They want to try to silence any opposition. It's a Marxist strategy and tactic going back a long ways. And the only antidote for us is to stand up and say, not on our watch. It's not going to happen. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.